Welcome to Flower Friends. This is Sarah Nayani coming at you from Seattle, Washington, where I grow loads of flowers in my small city yard and create artful flower arrangements that celebrate local seasonal blooms. This podcast was inspired by meetups with my local flower friends and the convos we have to support, encourage, and learn from each other. I welcome you to come along as a flower friend, to listen into interviews with experts in flower growing and design, and to join me on my journey of leaving a corporate job to start my business, Grow Girl Seattle. Today is a Sarah session, which means it's just me, and I'll be talking about signature flowers and seed starting, which are two topics that have been on my mind a lot lately. In this two-part episode, I'll first walk you through an exercise I decided to do before starting seeds this year, and then give some updates on where I'm at with seed sowing. If you listened into the mindset episode that came out in December, you know that this year I've been working on really trying to quiet the noise around me and quiet the urge to go in a million different directions. I feel like that's so tempting in a flower business because there's so many ways to go about this. But instead of trying to do it all or letting the influence of others guide my direction, I've been spending time reflecting on what works for me in order to steer this ship from a truly authentic and centered place that feels like it's coming from my heart and my soul. For me, that extends not just to business plans and business offerings, but also really all the way to garden planning and seed starting. Before diving into my huge seed boxes, I took a step back to spend time reflecting on my garden, my arrangements, and color palettes from the last year, and work through those exact same concepts that I talked about back in the mindset episode, but on the more specific level of garden planning, seed starting, and flower sourcing. During the first 2 years of my deep dive into gardening, I just wanted to grow everything I could get my hands on. I was so excited, and although there were some flowers that I knew that I loved already, I wanted to try more, and I wanted to see what was out there. Same thing at the flower market. I would show up. I would be so excited. I would kind of like race around from stand to stand and just kind of drink in all the color, all the beauty, and buy lots of new to me ingredients to try. When I look back, I kind of call this my dating phase. I feel like I've been on dates with so many flowers. And I think this part of the process is super important. So I encourage you to date around. You'll find new treasures, new color combos, and hopefully you just have a lot of fun with it. But just like dating, you'll probably find some duds that might not grow well in your area or for your climate or your garden conditions. You might find some flowers you don't love, and you might find some things that are really beautiful objectively, but they just don't mesh with your personal style. So I think dating around with flowers and finding out which ones don't click for you is super important. And I think it's actually just as important as finding the ones that do click. My friend and coach, Natalie, always says, "We're collecting data." And so this reminds me of that. I think all the data that you collect really helps you connect with yourself and your preferences. So during my third year of growing flowers intensively, which was last year, the timing aligned with when my floristry business started picking up more. And I think it was because of that combo, the more experience growing and then also doing more volume on floral designs, that I started to more consciously tune into what was working and what wasn't, and really hone into my favorite flowers for design. But of course, many of these realizations come when the season's already underway with plants you have already invested time and money so far in advance to get those spring and summer blooms. So I didn't have enough of some of the ones I wanted, and then I had too many of certain colors or varieties I just wasn't in love with. But lucky me, I am able to source from other grower friends and from one of the most wonderful flower markets in the country, maybe the world, for local flowers. We're just really blessed with climate and flower growers here in the Pacific Northwest. as I've been heading into my 2023 garden, I decided to put some conscious time into reflecting on the year, just to think more deeply about what I loved working with and why. I've already thought of a lot of my favorites, but I just wanted to give it a little bit of more time after last season ended to just really reflect and think about how the year went. And then to pick out my favorite flowers and really focus on growing those flowers this year. So with just a blank piece of paper and a pen, I was able to do a big brainstorm in a couple different phases. And that showed me a lot about myself and my preferences. So let me take you through how I narrowed down my list of favorite flowers and foliage, and then use that to decide what I'm going to grow myself and to decide what cuts I'm planning to just buy in this year. And that's okay. At least for me and my business style, it's okay to just say there's some I'm not going to grow and there's others I'm going to focus on. So I'm going to split this podcast into two separate parts. Part one is going to cover what I'm calling my signature ingredients exercise, which is that brainstorm and narrowing process that I just mentioned. So in part one, I'm just going to describe my general process, but not give away the specific details of my list and my flower preferences. That way, if you want to use this process, you can safely listen to this episode, which is part one, without having all of my favorite flowers fresh on your brain or being influenced by any of my opinions. Then in part two, I'll walk you through my actual brainstorm. I'll just take you through the exercise as I did it and the way that I listed things out to really illustrate the exercise, give you specifics on the varieties that I love using and the colors that I love using and why. I'll talk about some of my preferences and then some themes and realizations I had from doing this exercise. So listen into part one if you just want the process. And then part two, I'll go through my brainstorm and then lead all the way into the seeds that I'm growing and kind of what my setup looks like this year. So let's dive into the signature ingredients exercise. Flower friends know that picking a favorite flower is seriously, it's like picking a favorite child. There's so many beautiful ones to choose from. And if you sit down and actually think about it, you probably have several favorites from every season, not just several favorites for the year. It's like you're going to have, you know, 7 in spring and 12 in summer and 8 in the fall, maybe way more than that. For me, part of the beauty of flowers is that they're seasonal. Some of the flowers I love the most are only here for a few weeks and then they're gone until next year. I love how that marks the passage of time and place, and that I can instantly tell the season when I look at a photo or an arrangement of local flowers. There's something really cool to that. It's like fleeting and romantic, and it just feels really special to know, like, okay, this is what I create in June and I can't do it again until next June. I just find something really special about that. Okay, so you probably can't pick just one favorite flower, but can you narrow it down to 10? What are your signature flowers? That was the question that I asked myself. And while I really wasn't shocked by the list that I made, I was surprised by how spending some conscious time thinking about that question helped focus my plans for the year and helped me feel much calmer about seed starting. And it also gave me just something that I kind of intuitively knew in my brain, but now I have listed down on paper of what my signature flowers are. So the general premise of the exercise I came up with for myself, what I'm calling the signature ingredients exercise, was to brainstorm in 4 separate phases. First coming just from my brain and my memory with no outside influence or assistance, and then adding other elements in to jog my memory step by step. So then once I had this big brainstorm list in these 4 phases, I went back through to narrow it down and organize things. So like I mentioned at the end of this, I walked away with a list of signature flowers that I'm going to prioritize and put my focus on, a bigger list of all of the flowers and foliage I want to grow this year, and then also a list of cut flowers that just make more sense for me to buy in. And I took those off my grow list, and that was a huge relief. I also ended up with an avoid list of ingredients that just didn't really work for me this past year. And I find that it has been nice to have that when I've been facing my seed packets and I'm tempted to grow everything, because I often will just buy in tons of seed packets when I see something I think I like online, just so I have it when it's time to start seed sowing, or so that I get it before it sells out. And when I actually look back at the times that I've used some of those ingredients, they didn't work for me. So I'm taking them off my list. And then when I see the seed packet, I don't have to worry. I can give that away to somebody else and they can enjoy it. It fits more maybe into their style. So through this process, I also noticed some themes and patterns. I found the phases of brainstorming super insightful to get at the heart of my preferences, both conscious and unconscious. So let's start with step one. If you would like to try this signature ingredients exercise, let me set a scene for you. You need an hour or so of quiet time so that you can listen to yourself. Turn everything off. No TV on in the background, no kids, no pets, no music, just silence. And for this first step, no resources or references. Don't have your computer, your phone, magazines, flower photos, and do not have your seed packets nearby that you can feel waiting for their final judgment out of the corner of your eye. Just bring a blank piece of paper, a pen, and your brain. Now, I recommend using blank, clear paper rather than lined because I'm really particular and I love the feeling of working without restrictions. I have some notebooks, but I almost always just use clear blank paper. I love clear paper. Just feels freeing. Like you can do anything. You can dream up anything. I also recommend to work at a clean desk or kitchen table without clutter. For me, I find that an organized workspace really helps to quiet my mind and just tune in to what I'm trying to focus on. I think for me personally, when I'm surrounded by clutter, which happens a lot in my life, I always have buckets and vases and chicken wire and all sorts of stuff all around me. But when I clean it up, I just feel a lot more focused. And if I have clutter around me, I feel like I'm distracted thinking about everything that I need to clean. And then while you're at it in this quiet, kind of clear, clean space, and you have a little bit of time to yourself, maybe light a candle. I feel like you deserve the romance. Let's make this an event. This is important. Time to yourself to think. So once you're in this state and you have that quiet time set aside, I want you to walk yourself through the seasons in your mind and think about the flowers from each season. And then write down your favorite flowers or foliage that come to mind from each season. You don't have to split it by season, just keep a big list. So for me, I thought of several flowers right off the bat. I was like, these are my favorites. They just come to my brain. I love them. And then I tried to think through three or four of my favorite floral designs from this past year and kind of what was in those, what made it my favorite. Was it the colors? Was it the textures? What were the ingredients that were in that? And I wrote it down. And I'm not writing down like anything like flower varieties. I'm writing the flower type. So for example, dahlias. I'm not writing like 10 different varieties of dahlias. I just wrote dahlias. And I'm not trying to get into specifics here. I'm just using dahlias as an example because they're a very widespread favorite, I feel like, in the flower community. So that's just one example. But I would say don't get into varieties here. Just keep it at a higher level to the flower or foliage type rather than getting into colors or varieties within that type. And don't limit yourself with this list. You're not trying to achieve a specific number here. If it's something you love on a gut level, write it down. And you might be tempted to pull out your phone to look up names or to jog your memory. Don't do it, at least not yet. If you forgot a name, just write down a description like small yellow center with white petals. right now we are in the off the dome phase. So this is just alone with our minds. And I promise we'll get to your photos and seedless later. That's what the next phases are for. But I think you'll be glad that you didn't pull them out yet. Because this step is for the things that you love that come straight from your brain without influence or assistance. If you think of an ingredient while you're brainstorming this, like you thought of an arrangement and this ingredient was in there, but you only feel so-so about it, or you think of something from your garden that you grew last year, it just pops into your mind, but it's not your favorite, don't write it down yet. Just reserve this space for the things that you love. And then also, as you're thinking through the seasons, your garden, your farm, or your arrangements from this past year, you might remember some flowers and foliage that you didn't love growing, or you didn't love the look of, or you didn't like designing with. That is good too. This is really good information. So write those down, but maybe in a separate area, like off to the side. Maybe you're keeping your list on the left side of the paper and just create a little box or a little space in the top right corner to write down things that you remember that you didn't love. Okay, so now you should have a main list of flowers and foliage that you really, truly love, and maybe a side list of a few things that you didn't. When you look at the list of things that you love, it should feel like you. If you see something that feels like you just wrote it down because you think you're supposed to like it, or because it fills a functional role in your garden or designs, let's demote it. Just put some symbol next to it. Maybe draw an arrow down to show that you wrote it down, but you really didn't mean to. You like it, but you don't love it. And it's going to stay on the list, but it shouldn't sit with this core favorites at this phase. If you look at your list and you go, wow, I love all of these. Like, this is a good list. But there's just a few that I really can't live without that like make me swoon, that makes me have butterflies. Go ahead and put a little star next to those just to indicate like you're feeling something extra for those. But you don't have to take the other ones off. You can have a pretty good big list here. But I guess what I'm saying is everything that is on your list right now should be something that you love. Genuinely, you love it. It's not because someone else loves it. It's not because you think you're supposed to love it. It's not because you've grown it before and you have the seeds for it, or you've used it in designs before and it feels like a function for you, but it doesn't make you swoon. This should just be the things that make you really happy and that you love. So take a minute and reflect on what you just wrote down. This is really cool. And now I want you to draw a line on the paper or just do something to separate the sections, because we're going to move on to phase two. In step two, we're going to keep brainstorming, but this time you can use assistance. It's photo time. So scroll back through some of your favorite photos from the past year or two and look, really look at all the little pieces of magic in your favorite designs, the buckets you cut, or in your growing space. I think this is a time when people will remember some foliage plants, probably remember some magic sparkles, or things that might not be focal flowers, but really gave a kick to your garden or your designs or your farm or bouquets, whatever it is that you do. You might remember sort of like the best friends, you know, it's not the main focal flower that came to your mind right away, but it really added something to your work that you do. And there might be some that you were shocked you forgot to write down in phase one. This is good. This is interesting data. Don't be tempted to go up and write it in phase one. Just keep it with phase two. You didn't think of it without a photo. So keep it in this photo step two section of your list. And then just like in the first step, if you look at photos and you come across some items you don't love, or you see a bouquet or arrangement and notice one ingredient is really sticking out like a sore thumb to you and it just isn't your style, add it to the don't love list that you were keeping on the other corner. Or maybe you're writing it on the back or wherever you're writing your don't love list. Go ahead and write those things down. I think that looking at photos can really help jog your memory. At least for me, I'm so visual and I find floral design and gardening and flower growing to be very visual. And so for me, this was the most important step of like remembering a lot of the ingredients that I used that just didn't instantly come to mind in the first phase. Again, I would keep thinking about this from the perspective of what you love, not from what you already have. So if you see some photos of things that you grew or used last year that didn't make you squeal with happiness, don't feel like you have to list them here just because you've grown them before. Still stick with your personal must-haves for this brainstorm. And one thing that I'll mention is often when I'm blown away by something on Instagram or Pinterest or a gorgeous arrangement, some new crop or variety that I'm like interested in but haven't grown before, I will often like screenshot it and save it as inspo for later. And this is a great time when you're looking through photos. If you see something like that, that you haven't grown before, you haven't used before, but you really want to find it, just go ahead and jot that down. If it feels like you love it, but you haven't actually physically held it before, that's okay. If it's bringing up feelings of love for you, it can be on this list. And if it's not bringing up feelings of love, save it for later. We'll get to it. Now draw another line and let's go to step three. In step three, you can look back at old lists and invoices. So for example, I keep a spreadsheet like for my subscriptions where let's say it's an 8-week subscription. I have 8 tabs for each of the weeks. And I actually list out what I picked from my garden and how many stems I had, and then what I bought in from the flower market and other local growers. And I try to value those and make sure that all my bouquets are similar price value and quality as part of that. And I also just like to look back at what my customers had the week before so I can kind of mix it up for them the next week, whether that's colors or flowers or whatever. I find that those invoices are really handy for me because I have everything in one place. I guess those aren't invoices. That's really a list of my subscription ingredients. But whatever format you have this in, go ahead and look at that. So these are items that I feel like I was drawn to at the time I purchased them, but some of the things that I might not have grown myself. So for me, I was also looking back at like Seattle Wholesale Growers Market invoices when I bought in cut flowers, or I buy a lot of flowers from my friend Margaret at Ballard Urban Flowers. So I peeked through some of those invoices just to make sure I didn't miss anything that I know that I love. Maybe I didn't see it in photos or catch it in photos because I was going quickly. So this is kind of a good time to peek back at things. And so even if you didn't grow it yourself, you can go ahead and write it down if you loved it. And if you don't arrange flowers, you can look back through other invoices now. If you purchase things for your garden, like tubers or bulbs, plants that you bought from the nursery, seeds that you bought, this doesn't just have to be about flowers you bought in, invoices for that. You can look at your seed packets. You can look at, any orders that you have. If you keep some list of like what you've bought for this year, go ahead and peek at that. It's a good time to just kind of use this information of things that you've purchased to jog your memory, but we're still only writing down things that we love. We're just using these lists to remind us of plants, flowers, foliage, or ingredients that you love, but you forgot about in the first two steps. So again, steps 1 through 3, it's just about what you love. If it's something that you didn't love, save it for later. We'll get to that in this next step 4. But really steps 1 through 3 should be like, you have a gut reaction when you see it or think of it and you're like, oh yeah, that was a good one. I want to do that again. You have that feeling. So now draw another line and we're done with step 3. On to step 4. If you're doing events where you're aiming to include or grow specific ingredients and those ingredients haven't made it onto the list yet, add them in. So for example, I have a wedding with an ingredient that didn't make it on my first 3 lists, so I wrote it down here. Or if you sell wholesale flowers and you have customers requesting specific ingredients that you want to try growing but you haven't before and you don't feel like maybe you love them yet, okay, now add it to this list. Or maybe you have wholesale flowers that make you the most money, but they're not your favorites. So this is the list of things you feel like you should probably have on your grow list if you're being responsible about it. But I think it's interesting to note that you forgot about it when you went from your memory or from photos or from invoices and lists. This is also one, like if you have a garden and you're gardening and there's a big tree that you're, you know, the previous owner of your house put in, and maybe you use some cuttings from that tree, you can go ahead and list it here. If it's not a favorite, this is kind of like either things that you forgot about that you use or things that aren't necessarily coming from you. There's some like external influence here of a customer wanting it or a financial benefit to this flower, but it's not like your core gut favorite. So if you're doing this and you look back, you'll have four sections now. The first is your top tier, off the dome, signature, can't live without it list that came straight from your mind and your heart without any outside influence or references. The second section might include some of those heart beating types of ingredients too, but you needed a photo to remember it. The third tier is again, still things you love, but you needed a list, an invoice, a seed packet, or maybe a walk through your garden to jog your memory. And last are things you're maybe not in love with, but from a practical sense, you're probably going to use and or grow it this year. You also should have a list of items that you didn't love growing or working with. I bet there's a few that you think of. It's interesting for me, like I had a lot of ingredients that I didn't love and that I didn't click with. And I don't know, I really liked that, but I noticed some patterns with what it was that I wasn't liking. There were some themes about the structure of those in my arrangement. And so it's cool to kind of look and see the themes here. So I think it's super interesting to note where things fall on this list. I've been thinking a lot about what ended up on my top tier and why, and kind of what that tells me about myself, my style, my preferences, and where that might lead me with things like my floral offerings, client proposals, photo shoots, and really sinking into those favorites and honing in on a signature look of favorite ingredients that I use. So give your top tier some reflection, and I have a feeling these items are going to pop up in your mind and in your hands more frequently this year, now that you've really thought about how much you love them. If you're anything like me, your list is probably huge now. And just a reminder, I'll share my actual process and my actual list in part two to give you specifics, because people always ask me about that. And to really illustrate the exercise and talk about my preferences. But like I mentioned, I want to go through the whole exercise first with you in this first part of the episode, so you can do this from your own brain and not have my list fresh on your mind when you do yours. And if you're also anything like me and you're looking at this huge list, you probably don't have the space, the time, or the budget to grow all of these. If you're a florist and you're not planning to grow any flowers, it might be handy to take this whole list and put it into a spreadsheet you call favorites. You could even organize it by local bloom season or available season, and just have it handy to call up when you're putting together client proposals. So someone wants a wedding in August, you pull up this list, you're like, oh, here's my favorites in August. And that might be something that you stick into your proposal that you don't see necessarily on the wholesale list, but you know it's available that time of year, or it just didn't first come to mind for you when you thought of it. It's just, I think it's handy to have a list of favorites. It can do everybody some good. But for those of us who are growing our flowers, we're probably going to need to narrow things down. So let's get into narrowing. First, before you cut anything from your list, just take a minute to behold what you have in front of you. You have a list of your favorites, things that you absolutely love, and that is really cool. Maybe you have 100 flowers and foliage types that you love. Just to let you in on mine, I had 117 total. But still, when you think of how many types of flowers and foliage there are across each season, that's a fraction. I think there's something like 300,000 species of flowering plants. So I feel like 100 faves is pretty effing good. But not all of these flowers are going to be your core signature flowers. They may be ones that you love, that you go to in different seasons. But I have a feeling that if you were forced to, you could pick 10 top flowers that you just can't live without. So if someone came to you today and said, you can only have 10 flowers or foliage, what would they be? Which ones feel like you? Which ones make you happiest? Which ones are easier to work with for you? They just flow and work. They kind of like work with you. They click with you. Think about those. So let's just rip the Band-Aid and let's do that. Pick 10. Really think about it. If you had to choose, which ones are your signature ingredients that you just can't live without? And if you have this list in front of you, I'm guessing a lot of those are probably going to come from your first tier. And so when you think of the ones, just go ahead and circle or star or highlight these to make them stand out on your paper. And if you get to down to like 15, really try to go back and get it down to 10. And the reason for that is I just think that when you are forced to narrow something down and focus on some favorites, there are some benefits that come from that. So my advice is to find a way to prioritize these signature ingredients in your growing plan. For me, I'm going to let my signature flowers be my absolute guiding light and my home base this year that I plan everything else around. I'm growing a lot more than these 10 signature ingredients. And then within each type of flower, I'm growing some different varieties and colors. But choosing favorites as my signature flowers really takes the pressure off, helps me focus and prioritize, kind of identify where to put my efforts, where to go big on quantities, and then which seedlings to dedicate the most space and beds to. And it also just helps me think about what my signature flowers are and try to include more of those in the work that I do. So if a bride or someone who's hosting an event comes to me and says, I have this idea with these color palettes, I want to make sure that some of my signature flowers make it into everything that I send out the door so that my look is consistent. And I want people to be able to look at something and be like, oh, maybe Sarah made that. That looks like Sarah. That's what I'm going for. And I also genuinely believe that for me, because it's a little overwhelming with the growing and gardening and then the designing, a lot of that aligns at the same time each year. And so for me, having like a core set of plants to focus on, I think it's really going to help me listen to their rhythms and their needs more intimately. And that those plants are just going to be happier. If I have things out there that I can't live without and that are growing in my garden, I'm going to be out there even when I'm really busy. I'm going to pay attention to things a little differently than I would if it's just some filler plant that I'm not passionate about. I believe that. That might not be the case for you. You might be super meticulous and have, you know, way better time management than me and be able to spend out there. But I just want to narrow things down a little bit and just really have a home base. Now for everything else that didn't make this highest top 10 cut, I used the phases of the exercise to help me narrow things down. I'm already growing or I'm going to grow many of the things in the off the dome phase one list and many from my phase two photo lists. Whereas I'm not sure I need to grow many of the items from my phase three invoice list, unless they really stand out and I just genuinely forgot, or there's something new that I want to try. But I'm taking the hint personally that if it fell in phase three or four, it's just might not be something that I'm passionate about. And it's not that I'm necessarily going to cut all of those from my grow plan, but I'm going to think a little bit about why those are on my parts three and four of my list. So after circling my top 10 signature flowers, I went through the entire list, phases one through four, and I just put a little check mark next to the things that I'm already growing. So if I have flower bulbs or perennial plants that are already in the ground, those got a check mark. And then if there's seeds that I've already started or that I'd like to start, those got a check mark. Now, because I have the option to buy in flowers, that's part of my business plan, and my customers know that I buy in flowers. I put some extra thought into what is difficult for me to source and then for what's kind of like fairly easy to find. I also thought about what's super expensive to source as a cut flower, and at least over time that it actually might be cheaper for me to grow myself. And then I also thought about quality. Some flowers are fragile and they just don't travel well or don't work well if they're not cut at the perfect time. So even if I can buy those flowers at the market, some things just make more sense for me to grow myself, or at least grow some of, so that I know I have them on hand. And so, yeah, I just spent some time reflecting on those elements, because the fact that I can buy in flowers definitely allows me to cut more for my list than maybe those of you that are growing every single item that you're putting in your bouquets or arrangements, or that you're selling wholesale or whatever it is. Or if you have a garden, you know, you have tons of space, you know, you might not need to cut as much. You might have the room to try everything. But I will say, even for gardens, I really love the concept of having like big bunches of favorites that are repeated throughout your garden as sort of the theme that ties things together. So I think whether you're a gardener, a farmer, a wholesale grower, a farmer florist, or a florist, I hope some of the things in this exercise are helpful for really making you write down your favorites, your things that you love, and then help you narrow down a little bit to kind of sink into your top tier items. Because even if you have space to grow 100 different types of flowers and then more varieties within that, I don't know, maybe you want to narrow that down a little bit, maybe you want to dedicate an extra bed to something that you love and cut something that just isn't working for you. So for me, with thinking about sourcing and buying in flowers and how that helped me cut down, I'm not going to get into specifics yet of which types of flowers I'm talking about, but let me just give an example. If there's an ingredient that I love that's readily available to purchase during its bloom season as a cut flower at the market in good quality, that might be one that I decide to just scrap for my growing plan and buy in as cut flowers, or at least plan to buy in a lot as cut flowers and only grow a little bit of that. But if there's an ingredient I'm head over heels in love with, it's hard to find at the market, or I lose a lot of purchased stems to damage and transit, that one seems like a really good candidate to grow it myself. Now that you have check marks by what you already have growing and the plants you'd like to buy or seeds you'd like to start, the check marks kind of indicate your grow list. Some of them you've already planted and some of them you're gonna grow. So now that you have that list, it's probably still really big. I want you to just take a minute and challenge that a little bit. Think about your space, your time limits, what beds or areas those plants will go in, and if there will be practical space for them. Can you narrow things down just a little bit, so that you don't end up pumping out seedlings that have nowhere to go and get ignored and then make you feel bad later? And so that you don't waste resources starting seeds you don't have room for. Are you starting some favorite varieties with similar growth habits and needs that can reduce your workload through their similarities? For example, do you have plants that get their seeds started at the same time that need similar light and water and nutrients? Maybe they need similar support or trellising, so you only have to do that piece once. If you have things that are going to pop out in the garden around the same time, they have a similar habit, that could really help reduce time. But then do you have a few outlier seeds or flowers that require really unique conditions or a lot of babying? If those outliers aren't your absolute favorites and there's something similar in function, form, color, whatever it is that you can grow a little bit easier, maybe lean into that one that's a little bit easier for you. I guess what I'm saying is that once you get to your list of favorites and you cut it down to what you're going to grow, you know, anything from your list of favorites, it's going to be good. So if there's two flowers that you love and they serve a similar function in a bouquet or a design or your garden, whatever it is, but one is much easier on you than the other, can we lean into that a little bit? How can we simplify a little bit in a way that fulfills you and brings you what you love, but gives you a little bit of your time back? Because we all know if you're into growing flowers, if you're into designing flowers, anything to do with flowers, it's time consuming, it's all consuming, and we could all use a little more time for ourselves. For me, the decision to allow myself to buy in flowers from other growers was a complete luxury and a game changer. It felt so freeing when I decided to take that step and when I made it clear to my customers that not every stem would be from my garden anymore. A lot of them would be, but not all of them. When I was doing mixed bouquet subscriptions that were all from my garden, and that's what I had committed to, and I had weeks where something failed that I was planning on, or I just couldn't squeak out enough for my small space to make every bouquet feel as full as I wanted every week for 10 weeks straight, I had so much stress. I know that's not everyone's model, and I'm not trying to push that on you that you should, if you're growing everything yourself, that you should suddenly start buying in from other people. But I guess what I'm saying is to think through whatever your major stressors are, where those are coming from, and whatever those are, consider that when you're building in your growing plan. So if you have a similar stress to what I experienced, you're growing everything yourself, you committed to grow everything you sell is going to be something you grew yourself. Maybe you could go about relieving some of that pressure in a different way, like by building a clause into your website listing that says there may be some weeks without flowers and you'll refund if there's weeks like that. Or you could clearly state that this is a CSA and by purchasing this item, the customer is taking the wins and the losses with you. If you have a week without flowers, there's not going to be a refund. If you clearly state that, that's good. So the stress relief valve doesn't necessarily have to come from this part, your planting and sourcing plan, but if there are stressors that can be solved or addressed through your planting and seed starting plan, I'm suggesting to take some time and think through those practicalities to help you narrow your love list into your grow list. At this point, I decided to turn my list into a spreadsheet, and I know some of you are groaning and frustrated with me that I made you write this down on paper and didn't start with a spreadsheet, but let me tell you why. For me, at least, when I start with a spreadsheet, my computer is open and it takes something away from my creativity and togetherness with my thoughts that I experience when I put pen to paper. Spreadsheets also make me want to organize and think through the season, the start dates, start calculating when I need to start seeds. And what I do is I add all sorts of columns that I think distract from the purpose of this exercise, which is to do a big, heartfelt, thoughtful brainstorm. And then from the list of things you love, select your can't live without them signature flowers, as well as narrowing down a list of plants to grow. I find that if you try to do this in a spreadsheet, the urge to edit yourself is strong. If you're writing something down in ink on paper, it stays there. What you wrote in phase one, the off the dome list, it's inked. If there was an ingredient you love, but you forgot until you looked at photos, it's inked on phase two. For me, I don't know. I find if I do this exercise in a spreadsheet instead of on paper, I have a tendency to pretend I remembered that an ingredient in phase one. And so I just really like doing it on paper. I find it important to make it on paper to get to your list of favorites, pick out some signature elements, and put check marks by what you're already growing or want to grow. Then you've got what you need in an organic way before you start creating a spreadsheet and adding in all other factors and details and columns. But now that you have this list on paper in front of you, if you're a spreadsheet person, go ahead with it. Do a spreadsheet. I personally love Google Sheets because I can view it on my phone later if I want to. I set it up in my computer, but I like being able to go pop it open in my phone if I'm outside or I'm meeting up with someone and I just want to quickly reference it. I love having that. So what you could do is you could just take your list of check marks. You could just pick out the ones that are seeds that you're going to start, and you could just start a seed starting sheet and not turn this piece of paper into a spreadsheet. That's totally fine. But I actually found a benefit by putting this whole signature exercise that I just did on paper into a spreadsheet and creating some additional columns that help me sort through this. And so I'll share with you the columns that I made and how I did that. The first thing I did is I made a column for the round of when I thought of this plant. So round one, off the dome; round two, photos; round three, from an invoice or list; and round four, from an external voice, a client, a financial need, etc. Next, the plant type. I still kept this general, like just dahlia, not varieties of dahlias. I wouldn't get into varieties yet here. I just think reiterate the list that you just made. Next, I made a column with notes. And here, for a few things like dahlias, I actually jotted down a few favorite colors or varieties within the plant type if I felt like it. I did not do this for everything on my list. Just there's certain plants that there's only some varieties that I really like, or there's only some things I wanted to grow. And so I just kind of did a quick think through what I might want to grow within that plant type. Then I made a whole section for season. You could do this as a dropdown, or you could type in like summer, but I decided to set it up as four columns, one for each season. So spring, summer, fall, and winter. And then I dragged checkboxes down those columns so that, let's say that I have dahlias, for example. I'm just going to keep using that because it's so prevalent that I don't feel like it's influencing you. So if I have dahlias, I have the round that I thought of that. I have the name dahlia in the plant type column. And then I have a column with notes where I may have jotted down a few favorite colors or varieties. Then I get to this season section and I'm going to check off summer and fall because those are the ones when this flower is in bloom. So that way, if something blooms through summer and fall, I have these checked as different boxes, and then I can easily sort seasons and see that. I find that sometimes if I just type something like summer, fall in a cell, it can be difficult to sort if I'm later just looking for fall flowers. So that's why I made four separate columns so that I could filter on each season if I want to see what's in bloom then. Then I made another section with checkboxes, but this time for plant type. And you can organize this however makes sense for your brain. For me, I like to categorize things into flower, flowering branch, vine, foliage, texture, and grass. And this way, again, if something sort of falls into two or more categories, you're not typing it out in one cell. You can check both boxes and see and sort it more easily. So I'm going to give one more example, again, not to influence you, but think of ninebark. Ninebark, I think of as a flowering branch early in the year. And then later in the year, I think of it as a foliage. And so for me, if I have ninebark on my list, I'm going to have the, again, we'll just start from the first column. If I had ninebark on my list, I would write which round I thought of it in. I would write ninebark for the plant type. In the column with notes, if there's a few varieties or colors I know I like, I might write them there. For the season, I would probably have spring, summer, and fall, because that's when you can cut off ninebark. And so I would check all three of those boxes. And then for the plant type, I would probably check flowering branch and foliage. So I hope that illustrates kind of what I'm thinking. And then again, the reason that I do this as separate columns with checkboxes in them is so later, if I want to go look up all of my flowering branches, I can go do that. Most of those are going to be spring flowering branches. Or if I just want to look up foliage, it'll also show up there. I find that if you just have one cell and you write something like flowering branch / foliage, it's really hard to sort for. So again, that's why I do checkboxes. Then I made another checkbox section, and this was for sourcing. So I made columns for to grow, already planted, to plant, market slash buy, and then to forage. That way, if there's something I know I'll grow myself and I'm planning to buy at the market, I can check both boxes and again, easily sort. If there's something that I want to grow, I might have already planted it and I want to plant another succession. So I would check the boxes for to grow, already planted, and to plant. This sourcing section was the most important for me, and it really dictated the rest of the sheet. So once I figured out what I still had to plant, I could just filter on the to plant checkbox column, and I got my list of what I needed to plant. And some of those were perennials that I need to go to the nursery and buy, and some of those were things that I want to start from seeds. So I just took the seed ones and I made that into a separate sheet. So yeah, with that two plant list filtered, I made a new tab with just those, and I did the typical thing we think of for seed starting sheets. Instead of just listing out one type of plant, I listed out the varieties that I plan to grow. So I'm going to just list one more flower name here as an example. But if you're planning to start snapdragons from seed, you might have six different varieties that you're planning to grow. On my seed starting list, I give each of those a different row. You can set it up however you want, but that's just for me. At this seed starting phase, that's when I kind of write in more detail the varieties. And then I calculate the frost date to determine the seed sowing dates, et cetera. I think that's pretty standard for a seed starting sheet. But the beauty of doing this exercise before I ever got to that seed starting list is that I had done so much prep work and put in so much thought into what I wanted to grow that the seed list wasn't as overwhelming as I normally find it. I liked focusing on broad flower and foliage types throughout the exercise rather than getting into colors or varieties. It just helped me simplify and narrow things down before getting into the details. And the process helped me get to my must-have signature ingredients as the first priority for growing, so that when I filter which seeds I need to start this month, I sow those first. If I don't get to the second priority ones until a week or two after their target sow date, no biggie, as long as I get my priority ones done. That's how it's going to work for me. And I realize that I have the luxury that if I sow all my priority seeds and I focus my garden around that, and then I have some secondary favorites that I love and I'm planning to grow, but never get to those, I have the option to buy those in. So I realize that might be a little bit different than your scenario, but I think if you have a seed starting list and you've kind of indicated what your priority seeds are, it can just take some pressure off. And also, I bet through doing this exercise, you removed some of the seeds that you might've been planning to start. So even if you've already started seeds, which probably it's mid-February when I'm recording this, I still recommend doing this exercise. I started some seeds in the fall, and I did start more in early January before I did this exercise. And I also planted flower bulbs in the fall before I did this exercise. So there's not really a perfect time of year to do this process. If you're a flower grower, you probably have something going on every single season and you got to keep things moving and getting them in the ground. But I think doing this exercise before the bulk of your annual seed starting is super helpful to focus on what's important to you before you spend time, energy, and resources on birthing those baby plants. Make sure the ones that you're birthing are ones that you want. Whatever modifications you want to make to this process, I think that's great. If you think of something to add or something to subtract, you know, a different way you want to set it up, go for it. But I wanted to share a process that helped me this year in case any part of that helps you. I'll be back shortly with part two to share the details of my exercise, the signature ingredients and grow lists I came up with, and fill you in on the seeds I've started and how I grow them, what my setup looks like here. But if you'd like more seed starting content in the meantime, let me suggest a few other podcast episodes. So the April 18th, 2022 episode of Flower Friends, with Margaret Ullman Hess from Ballard Urban Flowers is a great seed starting episode. And I think it was the fourth episode of the podcast. So just scroll back a little bit. I also just listened to the seed starting episode of the No-Till Flowers podcast with Jenny Love and Lisa Mason Ziegler. And I loved that episode. So go listen into those. And I will be back shortly with part two and more details from my exercise and my seed sowing this year. Thanks so much for joining today, flower friends. I'll be back soon.